We're holding Pei Zayin Amud Aleph, the beginning of the new Perek. The subject of this Perek is going to be, we've been talking about before, the idea that a person has to be registered for the Korban Pesach in order to eat from it. You actually, by the way, have some Rishonim who learn that a person could eat from a Korban Pesach that they're not registered for, they're just not Yotze the Mitzvah that way. Be that as it may, now you could conceivably have cases where we're not sure which one a person is registered for, or you have different cases where for some reason a person is registered for two different Korbanos Pesach, but ultimately we have to decide they can only be registered for one and only eat from one, so we have to figure that out. So most of the first part of our parak deals with cases like that, and then the second half deals with various cases of Tmeim and various cases who's allowed to be registered from the for the Korban Pesach and eat from it, who's not, etc. So the Mishnah starts off, Ha'isha v'zman shi b'beis baila. A woman, when she's in her husband's house, in other words, she's already married, they've had Edersin, they've had Nisuin, she's living with her husband now. So we would assume that she wants to be part of her husband's Korban Pesach. So shochat aleha baila v'shochat aleha aviha. If her husband Shech did a Korban Pesach having her in mind, and her father also did, toicha mishal baila, she should eat from the one that her husband Shech did, because we can assume that that's the one she wanted to eat from, unless she specifically said that she wants to join in her father's one. The Meiri points out, by the way, now we're going to have later in the Perek, Machlokas, whether women are chayev in the Korban Pesach d'Oraisa or not. All this discussion over here presupposes that they are, because if not, then again, you know, if she eats from the wrong Korban Pesach, big deal. You know, she's not over on anything. And again, according to the Rishonim who say that l'chatchila, you're even allowed to, you're just not yotze Korban Pesach. Okay, so she's not yotze. But continues the Mishnah.
But it's a mitzvah shazman grama.
It is a mitzvah esa shazman grama. That would be reason for women to be potter. But we're going to learn later on in the parak machlokas about whether women in fact are chayev in Pesach Rishon or not. Because after all, there are loisa says involved as well, and we know a general rule that women are chayev in loisa says shazman grama, and sometimes that makes them chayev in the corresponding esa as well. For example, Shabbos. So the Mishnah continues, Hocho regal rishon lasis beveis avia. If she went the first Yom Tov after she got married, she went to her father's house, which is a normal thing that the first Yom Tov after she got married, she goes to her parents. Then shachat aleha aviyah v'shachat aleha baila. Then if her husband and her father both shech the Korban Pesach for her, toicha b'makom she yiroitza, then she can eat wherever she wants. Now we're going to ask in the Gemara, when does that mean? Can she choose at that time when she's sitting down to eat? Does she have to choose earlier? We'll get to that in the Gemara. Similarly, the Mishnah continues, Yosem Sheshachdu Olav Apotrupsin. You have a Yosem, an orphan. What if you have more than one guardian for him? And each one is bringing a Korban Pesach, and they each registered him for theirs. Yoichav Amakam Shuraitza, then again, he can eat from whichever one he wants, subject to the same conditions. I think it's kind of interesting when you get down to it. I mean, the Korban Pesach can only be brought in your shalayim, so you're not talking, there's not a huge distance between the father's house and the husband's house, or between the apotropsim's houses for him to go and ask which one, for him to go and arrange in advance. But I guess in case they didn't do that, it's not like they could pick up the phone and then call each other after all. All right, continues the Mishnah. Eved shal shnei shutvin. If you have an Eved that belongs to two different partners, So even if one of them registered him for his Korban Pesach, he can't eat because after all, the other half of him is owned by somebody else. So therefore, and he wasn't given reshus to register him. So unless they both agree, lo yoychamish, unless they both mutually agree that he's going to eat from Reuven's Korban or he's going to eat from Shimon's Korban, otherwise lo yoychamish al shnei, and he can't eat from either one because they'd have to both agree that he should eat from one particular ones. And likewise, Misha Chetzi Eved V'Chetzi Ben Chorin, somebody who is half free and half slave, which one way to do that would be if he bought off half of himself from his master, and another way would be if he was owned by two partners and then one of them freed him. So then Lo Yochum Mishal Rabo, same idea. He can't eat from his master or half masters or whatever Korban Pesach. Because unless his master said explicitly that I'm including also the half of you which is free, because otherwise, in other words, the cases we're talking about over here is that the master shechted the Korban Pesach having in mind all the members of his family. Well, this Eved that he only owns half of is only half of his family. So therefore, the Eved can't automatically eat on the basis of that. It would have to be in the first case that the two owners jointly together agree that he's going to eat from one particular owner's Korban Pesach. And with the other one, the owner himself would have to have in mind that I'm including not only the side of him that's half slave, but also the side that's half free. So the Gemara starts off, Shamat Mino Yesh Breira. When we say in the Mishnah that in the case where she's going to her father's, where she's going to her father's house for the first Yom Tov after she gets married. So then we said that so if her husband and her father both shecht the Korban Pesach for her, then she can eat from whichever one she wants. So Shamat Mino Yesh Breira. Does that mean that there is Breira, that we can say when she sits down to eat at one place or the other, then that shows retroactively that one is the one that was shechted on and the blood was sprinkled on her behalf. Now, the problem with that is we know that there's machlokas about Breira in many places in Shas. And in fact, the halacha ends up being that we don't say Breira in things d'oraisa, and here we're talking about d'oraisa. So the Gemara says, no, my roitza b'shas shchita. No, it doesn't have to be that, because when we can say b'mokam shehi roitza can mean whichever place she decides at the time, by the time of shchita, she has up to the time of shchita to decide, do I want to eat the Korban Pesach by my father or by my husband? Okay. So that's what it would mean then. But not that she can choose after the shchita. If we say ein breira, which in fact the halacha is, you can't say ein breira on things d'oraisa. Okay, the Gemara says a raminu. I have a contradiction on the whole thing that we're saying. Again, we're saying in the Mishnah that normally it's an automatic thing that she eats from her husband's Korban Pesach, unless otherwise specified. Only that first Yom Tov that she's going to her father's house do we say that she has a choice. But Uraminu, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Isha regal harishon echelas mishel avia. The other way around, the first Yom Tov she definitely eats from her father. In other words, Minas Tam, we assume she wants to join in her father's Korban Pesach. Mikan ve'elach, and any Yom Tov after that, roitza ichelas mishal avia, roitza mishal baila. Any other Yom Tov after that, if she wants, she can eat from her husband, from her father's Korban Pesach, and if she wants, she can eat from her husband's. So exactly the opposite of our Mishnah, that the first Yom Tov, she has a choice, and after that, it's assumed that she wants her husband's Korban Pesach. So what's going on? The answer is, can loikasha can be redufa leila can be she'ena redufa. It depends whether she's eager to go to her father's house or not. So Rashi explains that redufa means like this. Now we can be talking about, does she prefer to stay at home? She likes being together with her husband, versus Rashi doesn't spell it out, but the implication is maybe she doesn't like it. She doesn't like it that much. Not necessarily that they're having marital difficulties, but just, you know, she misses her father's house more and therefore has a preference for being there. So therefore, so our Mishnah is talking about Einu Redufa, is she really likes living with her husband. She really likes spending as much time as possible with him. So therefore, only the first Yom Tov is there a suffix, because it is normal for women to want to go to and visit their parents for the first Yom Tov after they get married. As opposed to all the other Yom Tovim, we assume that she wants to stay with her husband because we know that this is a woman who b'chlal gets along very nicely with her husband and likes being there. As opposed to the Braisa is talking about where she is redufa, she's eager to go to her parents' house wherever possible, and the implication seems to be because her husband's house is not so chaviv for her. She likes it better at her parents' house. So therefore, it's the other way around. So therefore, the first Yom Tov definitely we say she'd want to go there, because anyway, most women want to go there the first Yom Tov, and on top of that, this particular woman likes being there anyway. The rest of the Yom Tovim, after that, it becomes a suffix whether she wants one or the other. That's how Rashi explains. Tosfos explains the word redufa somewhat differently. According to Tosfos, what it is, she's eager to go to visit her parents in order to be able to tell them how good it is, how well everything worked out, how nicely things are working out in her new life. And the Rimigash actually adds in a Truva. There was also, you know, she was married. She was a Basula, so that everything worked out, that she was in fact a Basula, and there were no complaints on that score. So she's eager to go. So she's eager. She's Redufa, not so much like Rashi is saying whether she prefers it at her husband or she doesn't prefer it by him so much, but more Tosfos, yeah, looks at it more like the positive thing. She wants to be able to go and tell them how nicely things are working out. So now, on the other hand, so you could have, again, so one way of distinguishing then is between, so you can have, so in other words, it's not necessarily the first Yom Tov, because after all, you could have, it could happen that for the first Yom Tov, she wasn't able to go for whatever reason. So now she grabs the opportunity, a second Yom Tov, to go. Let's say, for example, she got married shortly before Pesach, but let's say for whatever reason, she wasn't able to go to them for Pesach. Let's say because of lockdowns. Let me rephrase that. Let's say she got married in Tishrei. She got married before Sukkot. So the first Yom Tov she should be going and visiting them is Sukkot. But it happened. There were lockdowns or whatever, and therefore she can't. So now Pesach is the second Yom Tov after she got married. It's 6 months later, but she's still Redufa. At that point, she's still eager to go and share the good news with them, which she hasn't really had a chance to sit down with them and tell them all of that until now. And she'll go with her husband. Yeah, but maybe not. If she might go with her husband, she might not. But also, then Tosfos goes on to say you could have the other way around also. She had a chance to visit them and talk with them at length before Yom Tov. So now when it comes to the Yom Tov itself, she's not necessarily so redufa. Not because she doesn't want to tell them the good news, but because she already did, and therefore there's no chiddush. And Tosfos discusses a little bit the various possibilities over there. So Tosfos says, by the way, in that connection, what it would mean is also, so we had the expression in the Mishnah was holcha regel rishon lasis beveis aviyah. She went to make the first Yom Tov in her parents' house, but actually Tosfos says it doesn't have to be that, not even that she's planning to spend Yom Tov there, just holcha, maybe just the fact that she went by itself, even without lasis, is enough to show that she's going over there, and therefore that shows that that particular Yom Tov she'd rather eat the Korban Pesach with them. Okay. Well, obviously, he finds out way before the Shechita. As long as he finds out before Shechita, then she's good. Yeah. Okay. So in this connection, Dichtiv Oz Hayisi Be'en of Kemoitzes Shalom, we find at the end of Shir HaShirim, where the woman, which is the Jewish people personified, says, then I was in his eyes like a woman who finds peace. V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan explains, what does that expression mean? It means Kekala Shenimtzes Shlema Beveis Chamiya. It's like a Kala who was found whole in her father-in-law's house, meaning, in other words, that she and her, that her husband and her in-laws and everyone are getting along very nicely with her. And she's eager to go and tell about her praise in her father's house. She wants to go and tell them the good news, how well her married life is working out. Now, according to Rashi over here, we're not really bringing a proof. We're just, since we mention a case of Redufa and not, then therefore the Gemara brings this drasha about Redufa. But according to Rashi, it's a slightly different thing, because in the Mishnah and in the Braisa and in the Halacha matter, we're talking about that she's eager to visit them because maybe she's eager to visit them more because she likes their place better. She likes her parents' place better than her husband's place, as opposed to in the drasha over here, we're saying that no, she loves her husband's place, but she's eager to go because she wants to share the good news of how well she's doing. According to Tosfos, it is actually the same thing, because Tosfos is saying that in general, women are redufa. They're always eager to go and share the good news. Just the difference is, did she already have a chance to before on a previous Yom Tov or on a previous time that wasn't Yom Tov? Kedichtiv, and in fact, you have a pasuk that expresses also this idea. It's really ksiv. It says on the side over here that it's not really a proof to what we said before. It's another drasha in this connection that the Eibishter says, "V'hoya bayemahu nu'um Hashem." It will be on that day, says Hashem to the Jewish people, "Tikri'i ishi." You will call me ishi, my husband. V'lo tikri li oid bali. You won't call me anymore bali, which is also a word for husband. But what's the difference between ishi and bali? Amar Rabbi Yechonah, "Kekala bebeis chamia." V'lo kekala bebeis avia. It means that in the future, la'asid love. however, the Jewish people will be like a kala in her father-in-law's house. In other words, she's already happily married and living with her husband, not like a kala who's only still living in her father's house, because only erusin have happened and not yet nisuin. So Maharsha explains, this Gemara is also brought in Ksubas, Maharsha explains over there that all this time, we Jewish people and Hashem have been like a couple that only had erusin. Only when Mashiach comes are we finally going to have the nisuin. So therefore, so that's what we're saying. At that point, the Eibishter won't be to us like Bailey, like, yeah, he's my husband, but I'm not really that comfortable around him yet. We'll be like Ishi, my man, like he and I get along very nicely together. That's how it'll be lost in loving. Okay. Since we're darshaning psukim about marriage and psukim, and we have the pasuk oz ha'yisi be'enov kemotzis shalom. So the first half of that pasuk in Shir Hashirim is ani choyma v'shodai kamigdolos. So the Jewish people say, I am a wall and my breasts are like towers. So the Gemara starts the drasha a couple of two psukim before that. Why is the Jewish people saying that? It starts out that in Shir Hashirim, Ochos lanu ktana, we have a little sister, the shadayim ein la, and she has no breasts. In other words, poshut pshat is, in other words, like you have, her family is talking about, like, what should we do with her as far as getting her married? But, of course, the whole Shir Hashirim is a mashal about the relationship of the Eibishter and the Jewish people. So what is this little sister with no breasts? What does that represent? This refers to Elam, the area of Shushan, where Daniel lived, which had the schus to learn Torah, but not to teach Torah. Meaning Daniel, as great as he was, as great as a tzaddik as he was, we don't find him teaching people Torah. Like there weren't enough people over there who were interested in learning Torah for Daniel to be able to be mashpia on them. There was actually a different Gemara elsewhere where Rashi mentions the same thing is true of Mordechai. Mordechai also lived in Shushan, and he also we don't really find, at least in Torah Shebichsav, that he had a lot of talmidim. We know he gathered together the 22,000 kids, but that was because of Haman's gzera. But that he had regularly a beis medrash where he taught people Torah, we don't really find that. In other words, the contrast is with Bavel, where at that same time Ezra Sofer was living in Bavel, and he had the schus to teach the entire. He ended up teaching the entire Jewish people Torah. Rashi quotes a pasuk about him: Ulalamid li Yisrael, Ulalamid bi Yisrael choyko mishpat. So unlike Elam, which was like a woman without breasts who's not able to nurse a baby, Bavel is like a woman with breasts who's able to. So then when the pasuk continues, the first half of the pasuk that we quoted before, Ani choyma v'shodai kamigdolos, the Jewish people say, I am like a wall and my breasts are like towers. So Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Ani choyma zu Torah, when we say I am a wall, this refers to the Torah, which protects us like a wall. V'shodai kamigdolos, elu tamid hachamim, that refers to the tamid hachamim, who again, like breasts that give milk to a baby, the same way the tamid hachamim make it possible for other people, they teach other people, and they're mashpia to other people, yeah. And then Rava Omar, Rava says a little differently, Ani Choyma Zu Knesset Yisrael. The words Ani Choyma refer to the Jewish people collectively, who stand strong like a wall and don't assimilate among the Goyim. V'shodai Kamigdolis, and my breasts are like towers, Ele Bote Knesset, or Bote Medrashis, those are the shuls and the Bote Medrash, which make it possible for us to stand strong and not assimilate among the Goyim, and to be Mashpia Torah and Tefillah to the next generation. So according to Rava, yeah, but so Rava had Rava him. According to Rava, Mordechai and Daniel themselves are Talmid Chachamim. But nevertheless, the fact is, But on the other hand, the fact is they didn't teach. They had shuls, but they didn't really have Batei Medrash. They didn't really have the chance to teach people Torah. Yeah. Which again is, we're not saying it's necessarily their fault. We're saying that the place where they lived wasn't conducive to it. That the people, the Jews in Elam, were not really that much interested in learning Torah. It still means, I mean, you know, Bapashtus, it still means that Daniel and Mordechai could have worked harder to be poil on them to be more receptive to it, but the fact is they didn't, and therefore, yeah. It's like Avraham versus Yitzchak, kind of. What? Like Avraham and Noach, yeah, that's a good point, right. Yeah, where Noach is a tzaddik in pelts. Well, okay, I don't think we're going to say that Daniel and Mordechai are a tzaddik in pelts, but yeah, they weren't mashpia as much as they could have, I guess, yeah. Okay. And, you know, it could be. I mean, when you get down to it, both Daniil and Mordechai are both working for the king. So that alone may have made, you know, they're a little taken up with that, and they don't have time to teach Torah on a regular basis. Whereas Ezra was purely Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the Talmud Chacham, and he was able to. Yeah. Okay. Omer of Zutra Batruvia Omer Rav. Another drosha in this connection. My dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Tehillim, Asher bonenu kinetim gudolim minurehem, that our sons are like plant, are like young plants that are grown in their youth. Meaning, you mean like young plants that haven't been wound yet. Bnei senu kizavios, our daughters are like the corners of a building. Mechutavos, that are carved out. Tavnis heichel, the image of the heichel. So what is this pasuk telling us about the greatness of the young Jewish men and women? Asher bonenu kinetim, elo bachur Yisrael, shalei tam utam chet. This refers to the young Jewish men who have not yet tasted the taste of Avera. In other words, unlike young men in various other societies who go and sow their wild oats, v'mizok def English, you know, they go and play around. The Jewish men are careful, and they save themselves for when they're getting married. The pasuk was written by David HaMelech, but it refers in general throughout the generations to the Jewish men in all generations, even as the Gemara is going to say after the Churban, where they're careful with this. Yeah, Bnei Seinu Kizavios. When the pasuk continues, our daughters are like corners. Elu B'sulis Yisrael. This refers to the young Jewish women. Sha'ogdus Pischein Lavalein. They close up their openings and save them for their husbands. In other words, again, they're not mizana. They don't play around while they're young before they get married, as many other nations do. Rashi says another explanation is that even after they're married, they reserve things because, after all, when they're nida, they tell their husbands, "Sorry, I'm off limits right now." And v'cheinu oimer, we see that the word zavius is related to. We see that the word zavius is related to being filled with something. In other words, the point is, it actually explains. Even though we're talking, these young men and these young women have tremendous taiva for this, but nevertheless, they hold themselves back until the right time. Now we see, therefore, there's a connection between zavius and being filled. They will be filled like a bowl in the Beis Mikdash, like a bowl full of blood, like the corners of the Mizbeach. So we see that the corners are being described as filled. The same thing over here. When we're saying B'nei Seinu Kizavius, means they're filled. They're full of taiva, but they're going to still hold themselves back until the right time, until they're married, or until they're tahor, as the case may be. Tosfos says differently. The point is that the word, the zavius, the corners of the mizbeach, are full of blood. The same way we're talking these women, they're full of blood, and therefore they hold themselves back because dam nida. Marshall also points out that the corners of the mizbeach, a mizrak, and the corners of the mizbeach, the Gemara mentions, they both have a receptacle. They're both keli. The mizrak obviously is a keli. The corners of the mizbeach, the Gemara mentions in a few other places, were hollow on the top. They were surrounded by cement or whatever they were made out of, but the middle of them was hollow. So therefore, it represents the idea, like the woman is a keli. She's able to, she's physically capable and physically desirous of having relations, but she holds herself back until the right time. Another place where we see that the word zavios refers to something that can be filled, mizavenu maleim, the next pasuk continues in that same capital in Tehillim, continues, our mizavenu, our corners, maleim, are full, mifikim mizanozan, they produce from one period, from one season to the next season. Zan really means like a meloshin mozo, and it means a season when grain is produced. Anyway, so therefore, the pasuk is praising, again, these young Jewish men and women that hold themselves back in these things until the right time. And when the pasuk continues, mechutavos, carved out, tavnis heichel, in the image of the heichel, it means elu ve'elu, both the boys and the girls, because they act this way, because they act in this tzniastic way, mala alein akosif kila nivna heichel b'yameyan, the pasuk considers it as if the heichel was built in their times, because they're bringing kedusha into the world, and kedusha makes it, is associated with the Beis Mikdash, the Beis Mikdash is Beis HaMikdash, it's the place of Kedusha. And we have, Rashi mentions at the beginning of Kedushim, whenever you find Geder Erva, whenever you find that people hold themselves back from Erva, then there you find Kedusha. So these boys and girls who hold themselves back from Arayas, the Pasuk considers it as if the Beis Mikdash was built in their times. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to start dashing. Now the Gemara is going to give a long story, which it relates back to. So earlier, first of all, we were talking about in all of these drushas, we're talking about the metaphor of the Jewish people and the Eibishter as a husband and wife, as a wife and a husband. So relating to the Mishnah, but also in particular, the first pasuk that we mentioned. Not the first pasuk. One of the psukim we mentioned earlier on the Amud, "Bahaya bayemahu ha'nuom Hashem tikri ishi," is a pasuk from the Navi Hosea. In fact, we read it as one of the psukim in Haftorah Parshas Bamidbar. So now there's a whole backstory over there that's in Perek Beis of Hosea. There's a whole backstory in Perek Aleph, and the Gemara says that now the Gemara is going to tell us that now there's a backstory behind the backstory. So the Gemara is going to tell us the story of Hosea. Bekitzer, what it is like this. The Pasuk tells us, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, that the Eibishter at one point tells Hosea to go marry an Eshes Znunin, a woman who is unfaithful. Now, you have some of the Rishonim learn that didn't really happen. It means that he saw the Nevuah as if he had married such a woman. The Rambam, for example, writes that in Mor Nevuchim. Some of the Mephoshim on the Pasuk say that. But the Gemara over here is going to take it that it literally happened. Now, why would the Eibishter tell him to do that? So therefore, we have the whole backstory of how that came to be. So it starts like this. Nothing to do with Hosea, but no. This is the Navi Hosea ben Be'eri. He's the first of the Tereyasser. He's the first of the Tereyasser. The Gemara is going to tell us in a second. He started his Nevuah even before Yeshaya. The Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that really the order should have been Hosea and then Yeshaya in the order of Nevi'im in Nach. The thing is, Hosea is a short sefer, and the Chachamim were afraid it would get lost. Therefore, they joined it with 11 others to create the sefer Tereyasser. And since the last of the Tereyasser, Chagai, Zechariah, and Malach, lived later than all the other ones at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, so all of them end up being at the end of Nevi. But yeah. So this is in the middle of the first Beis Mikdash. So it starts off like this. Dvar Hashem asher hoya el Hosea begomer. This is the word of Hashem that came to Hosea, and it describes when did he live? When did he function as Navi? Bimei Uziyahu Yosam Ochaz Yechizkiah Melech Malchei. Really, it says Yehuda. So in the time of those four kings, Uziyahu became king a little over 200 years before Churban Bayis Rishon. So we're talking the middle of Churban Bayis Rishon. So we're talking the middle of the Bayis Rishon, and then Hosea continued with his Nevuah in the years after that during the reigns of the next few kings. So the Gemara says, "Beperek echad nisnabu dalad neviim." There were four neviim who said Nevuah during that same period. The four neviim were, as the Gemara is going to list them soon. The gadol shebekulon Hosea, the greatest or maybe the oldest of all of those neviim was Hosea. Shenema, because the next pasuk continues, Tchilas Dibur Hashem b'Hosea, the beginning of Hashem speaking to Hosea. Now, what do you mean? What do you mean? Tchilas Dibur Hashem b'Hosea, Dibur Tchila. Is Hosea the first Navi that Hashem ever spoke to? Moshe ad Hosea kam Nevi'im. There were many Nevi'im from Moshe to Hosea. Hosea, again, therefore, he's beginning his Nevuah 600 odd years after Yitzias Mitzrayim. So there were many Nevi'im in those 600 odd years. Why the expression Tchilas Dibur Hashem, as though he's the first one that he's speaking to? So Amar Rabbi Yechon, that means Tchila la'abo Nevi'im shenisnabu ba'oseh ha'perek. Means he's the first of the four Nevi'im who said Nevuah during that period. Be'elohein Hosea, Yeshaya, Amos, u'micha. So by Hosea, the Pasuk lists these four kings that we just said. Yeshaya, the Pasuk tells us that he began his Nevuah, that his first Nevuah was on the day that Uziyahu brought Keturas and got Saras. You have Pasuk Perek Vav of Yeshaya, which we read as the Haftorah of Parashas Yisrael, describes B'shnas Mois HaMelech Uziyahu, in the year when Uziyahu died, and the Gemara explains, and Rashi brings on the Pasuk over there, it doesn't mean when Uziyahu died, it means when he became a Metzora, because he brought Keturas, and the Pasuk says over there, Vayanu Amos HaSipim, the whole Beis Mikdash is shaking because there was a tremendous earthquake because the Eibishter was angry at what Uziyahu had did, how he's trying to bring Keturas when he's a Zer. It's a whole story. So anyway, the point is, so Hosea therefore began his Nevuah in the times of Uziyahu. Yeshaya also did on the day that Uziyahu got Saras, and he had Saras for many years after that. He lived for another 25 years after that. Then you have Amos. Also, the pasuk describes that he started his Nevuah in the time of Uziyahu. Now, by Amos, it doesn't list the other kings. So Rashi explains over here that it means that nevertheless, it means that he continued throughout the reigns of the other kings. Maharshal says it doesn't necessarily have to be. Okay, he said Nevuah during the time of Uzziahu. Maybe he passed away shortly after that. But the point is, at least in the time of Uzziahu, he's already saying Nevuah. Micha, the Pasuk doesn't mention Uzziahu. It starts with Yosam. However, again, since Uzziahu lived afterwards for another 25 years, and Yosam was only filling in for his father, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in fact, mentions that he's a great example of Kibud Av, that he didn't take the throne for himself till after his father passed away. So therefore, it means Micha started his Nevuah a little later than the other ones while Uzziahu was still alive, but after he's not functioning as king anymore, after Yosam is discharging the office of king, and Uzziahu is king in name only. But we see, in other words, that all four of them are working during the same period. No. So there's the four Nevi'im. Of the second one of these kings, Yosam, when his father Uzziahu got Saras, the Gemara actually talks about Moed Katan that Yosam himself was conceived and born only after Uzziahu became a Metzora. The Gemara learns from that a Metzora is allowed Tashmish Amita. But the point is, eventually, when Yosam grew up and his father was still sick with Saras, then he didn't take over as and say, you know what, my father can't do it anyway, I'm king. He was acting king. Shofet HaSamaoretz is the expression in the Pasuk. Anyway, so Micha started his Nevuah during that period when Yosam is already serving as acting king, but while Uzziahu was still alive. So we see that all four of them were Menabe at the same time. So what happened? So here's the backstory of Hoshea. The Ebishter one day says to Hoshea, your children, the Jewish people, have done Averis. What should I do about it? Now what Hoshea should have said is, after all, have rachmanis on them. They're your children. What do you mean, my children? They're your children. Bnei Chanunechahim, they're the children of the ones that you favored. Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Gauga rachamecha aleihem. So roll your rachmanos on them, like we say in davening, midas harachamim aleinu hisgaugali, another similar psukim. On Yom Kippur and other times. Yeah, so in other words, have rachmanos on them, give them a chance. But loy daya sha'omer loy kach, not only did Hoshea not say that, Ela Omalafonov. Rather, he said the opposite. He says, Rebbeinu Shalom, Kola Olam Shalachu, you, the whole world belongs to you. Have it, Boma Acheres, swap them out for another nation. So Tosfos explains, in other words, the fact that the Eibishter told Hoshea to do such an unusual thing and marry an Eishes Nunim, the Gemara is darshining that this is the whole backstory that led to that, that Hoshea had done something wrong. So Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ma Esav Zaken Zeh. So the Eibishter says, what should I do for this old man? How do I show him that he's wrong? I'll tell him to go marry a woman who's a zona, and that he should have children who are bnei znunim, where you can never be 100% sure that they're your children, because after all, she might have been mizana with somebody else. Then I'll tell him you should send her away and divorce her. We'll see if he's able to go and send her away. Then fine, I can say that I also have the ability to send away the Jewish people. But if he says I can't, as we're going to see on Amud Beis, and the Eibishter is going to tell him, no, so what makes you think I can send away the Jewish people? So here's what happens. Shenemar. So the next pasuk continues. So he went and married Goymer Bas Divloim. Now why was she called that? Goymer. So why was she called Goymer? Everybody would finish their bia and their taiva with her. And she's called Bas Divloim, is Dibara Bas Dibara. She herself has a bad reputation because of her znus, and her mother also. She's born to a woman who also had a bad reputation like that. So Divloim, Meloshin Diba twice. Dibara Bas Dibara. Ushmuel, Shmuel says the reason why she's called Bas Divloim. She was sweet to everybody's mouth like a sweet fig. In other words, again, everybody liked being with her. Rabbi Yechanan Amar Shah called Doshin Bakadvela. Rabbi Yechanan says it means everybody trampled on her like a fig. You know, the same idea, everybody was mezana with her. Dover Acher, another explanation. So those are three explanations of why she's called Bas Divloim. But now let's go back to the name Goymer. We said because everybody Goymer Batavasa. But another explanation of the name Goymer. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Shebikshu Lagamer Mamonin Shoh Yisrael B'Yameh, the Goyim were threatening to finish off all the wealth of Jewish people in her time. In other words, in her time, various Goyish nations, in particular Aram, were attacking Eretz Yisrael over and over, and they took huge amounts of spoils, and they made the kingdom of the Aseres HaShevatim was really doing very, very badly. So the all of their wealth was almost gone. So therefore, she was called Goymer. Rabbi Yechanan Amar Bozz over Gomer. Rabbi Yechanan says not just that they wanted to, they actually did. They very nearly finished off all the wealth of the Aseres HaShevatim. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ki Ibdam Melech Aram, the king of Aram had destroyed them. By Yisimim Ka Ofer Lodush, and he made them like dust that's trampled. This is actually, Marsha points out that this is actually two kings before. This is actually a couple of kings earlier. But nevertheless, we see that there was a period of time over there when the Aseres HaShevatim were faring very, very poorly. So because of that, this woman was named Goymer in token of that. By the way, this that we're calling Hashaya Zokain, the Marashal has a very interesting point on it. Now, we're saying the children might not be his or not, but we have a rule in Halacha called Roiv Be'ilas Eitzel Abbal. Even if a woman is Mizana, we assume most of the time when she's having relations, it's with her husband, and therefore her children are from him. That's also possible that if she gets married, she gets changed. But even if not, even if we know after she gets married that she's Mizana, nevertheless, we say Roi Ve'ilas Eitzel Abal, and therefore her children, or we assume that the children are from her husband for purposes in Halacha. But the Marashal says maybe the vote is a Zokin, who's as it is not doing Bia as often, maybe that Chazaka doesn't apply. Therefore, the Gemara stresses that he's a Zokin, and therefore there's much more of a chance that these children are not in fact his. So the Pasuk continues, this Goymer became pregnant after Hosea and she got married, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son to him. To him means, in other words, we see at that point she wasn't yet being Mizana. So she had a reputation before for being Mizana before she was married. Not like we said before that the Benois Yisrael don't do that, but at least after she got married, for a while she stayed on the straight and narrow, and therefore she had a son for him. Vayomer Hashem Elov, and the Eibishter says to Hosea, Kroshmo Yisrael, name him Yisrael, ki oid ma'at, because it's going to be just a short time. I will remember the blood that was spilled in Yisrael against the house of Yehu. I'll explain in a second what that means. Vishbati Mamelchus Beis Yisrael, and I will cause to stop the Malchus of Yisrael, of the Aseres HaShevatim. What happened was a few generations before Hosea, you had Achav and his family who were worshiping Avodah Zarah and doing all kinds of other avodas. So eventually the Eibishter sent a Navi. Eventually the Eibishter told Elisha, and Elisha in turn delegated it to Yonah, who went and anointed Yehu ben Nimshi as the new king of Yisrael, and his job was to get rid of all of Achav's family and all of the Avodah Zarah that Achav had brought into Yisrael. No, he wasn't related at all. I mean, he wasn't, this Yehu was an army captain at that time. So Achav already was dead several years by then. He'd been killed in battle. His son Ahaziah had been king after him, then his son Yehoram. This is while Yehoram, Achav's son, was king. So Yehu, one of the army officers, was sent with the job to wipe out the whole family of Achav and get rid of Avodah Zarah from Eretz Yisrael. So he did that. He killed the whole family of Achav, many of them in the city of Yisrael, which is a city in the north of Eretz Yisrael. What ended up happening, though, was that Yehu kept the Eglei HaZahav of Yeravam ben Nevat. So therefore, he and his descendants continued with that as well. On all of them, the pasuk is Vayasara Be'enei Hashem. Therefore, because of that, he doesn't. So therefore, he didn't do the full shluchos of Hashem. So he gets a nevuah, which we're going to have later on the Amud, that he was told that four generations of his descendants will be kings of the Jewish people in the Schar, because he did get rid of the family of Achav. Nevertheless, because they still remain Rishoyim, therefore the Eibishter is blaming him for the blood that was spilled in Israel, as if like he did it without any reason at all, as if like he killed them stam without any good reason. there's a vote they say on that, by the way. The Gemara tells us in a couple of places that there's a concept of Avera Lishma. Sometimes you have something which objectively is an Avera, but you're doing it for a good purpose, and therefore it's considered like a mitzvah. But in those cases, more than any other, a person has to be very careful that they're doing it completely L'shem Shemayim and not with any other motive involved. And we see an example of that over here, because because they didn't get rid of all of Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, only Baal and Asherah and whatever, and they continued with the Egel Azav. Therefore, the Pasuk blames them as if they stam killed innocent people in Yisrael. The two statues in Beis El and Dan, where the people went to them to bring Korbanos and to Davin and whatever, rather than to the Beis Mikdash. Right. So therefore, so the baby is named Yisrael. So it actually has a few different meanings. It refers to this place, Yisrael, where Yehu had killed all those members of Ahav's family. It also, Rashi and Tosfos both mention over here, there's also a gzera implied in it, Yisrael, Meloshin Zera, that the Ebeshe is saying, I am going to scatter and plant the Jewish people in Golos. So therefore, that's the first gzera that the Ebeshe is making against the Jewish people, that there's going to be a Golos. Then the pasuk continues, Batahar oid batelet bas. Then this goymer became pregnant again, and she gave birth to a daughter. Vayomer loy, and the Ebishter tells Hosea, Kroshma loy ruchama. Name this girl loy ruchama, the one who's not being had rachmanus on. Ki loy oisif oid arachem es beis Yisrael, because I will no longer have rachmanus on the house of the Jewish people. Ki nosei es alahem, should I forgive them their averus? So in other words, this is the second gzera that the Eibush is saying that I'm not going to forgive them their averus. Then Vatar Vatelet Bain, the pasuk continues a couple of psukim later. She became pregnant. She had another son. Vayomer, and Hashem said, Krosh moi loy ami, name this baby loy ami, ki atem loy ami, because the Eibush is saying, you are not my people, but anoichi le'eyalachem, and I won't be your Eibush. So three gzeras that the Eibush had made again, so the Eibush had told Hosea, the Eibush was wanted to tell Hosea in the end, I'm not going to replace the Jewish people with another nation, but nevertheless, because Hosea had been Makat on them, therefore the Eibishter made these three gzeiros and represented them in the names of his three children. So now what happens, the next part of the story. After he already had two sons and a daughter, which Iyun Yaakov points out on Ein Yaakov, it means that now he was Mekayim Piri Verivya, according to both deis. Bishamai says you need two sons. Bishilu says you need a son and a daughter. So L'chol HaDeis he was Yotze. So now, Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Hosea, the Ebishter says to Hosea, Loi Hoya L'chol Lumen B'Moshe Rabbach, shouldn't you be learning a lesson from your master, from your Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu? Shekivin Shedibauti Imai Pirish Menesha, when I spoke with him, he separated from his wife for the rest of his life. You also should separate from your wife. In fact, the idea is, okay, most Nevi'im don't have to do that, because fine, they don't get Nevu'ah at all times, but in particular, some of the Mephoshim explain, the Ebishter is telling him, it's one thing if you had a wife who was a kosher woman like Tzipora, then fine, only if you're a Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to separate. But your wife is this Eishes Nunim, what are you, a Navi, you're supposed to be Kaddish for Tahar, what are you doing with such a wife? You should be separating from her. No, that's right. That's the point. In other words, but here, where he had his wife was an Eishes Nunim, yeah. So you should separate from her. Omoloi, so he says, Rabbeinu Shalom, Yeshli Bonim Mimena, Ve'einani Yochol Lo Tziyav Lo Legasha. I have children with her, so I can't send her away and I can't divorce her. Meaning, one point is, then he's going to be Motzi Laz on these children. If he divorces her, then everybody's going to say, oh, you know why, Taka, these children aren't his. So that he can't do that. Now, can't, I mean, what do you mean? The Eibush is telling you to divorce your wife, he's saying you can't. So Ben Yehoyada says, he's not saying, fine, of course, now I will. But the reason why I never learned from Moshe Rabbeinu all this time is because I always felt that it would be a bad thing to do, because then it's going to be Motzi Laz on her and on my children. Well, that too, yeah. So now, Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Uma Ata She'ishtecha Zoyne Uvanecha Bnei Znunim, Madach, then you, your wife is a Zoyne. Your children are bnei znunim, ve'ein ati yedei im shalchohayim im shalachayim. You don't know. Fine, even we say roi be'ilot etzel abal, you don't have DNA testing. You don't know 100% for sure that these are your children. Kach, and still it's like that you're saying I can't send her and my children away. Yisrael, shein bonai. So So now the Jewish people are my children, bnei b'chunai, the children of the ones that I tested, boichan meloshen b'china, a test, bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, they're the children of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, echad me'arbar kinyonin shekhanisi ba'olami, one of the four special personal things that belong to me in the world. Kinyonin literally means things that I acquired. So Rashi explains, like a person goes to the trouble of buying something and spends money and spends time and whatever on it. The same way, a kinyon by the Eibishter doesn't mean he has to spend money, but it means something that's very precious to him and something that's like his personal possession. And the Gemara interjects, what are these four? Now, in Pirkei Avos, actually, we have five, but here the Gemara is going to list four of them. Torah Kinyan Echad, the Torah is one. Dichtiv, Hashem Kononi Yireshis Da'okai. Hashem acquired me as the first thing in his way of creating the world, because Alpayim Shana Kodma Torah Lo'olam. Shamayim Va'oretz Kinyan Echad, Dichtiv Konei Shamayim Va'oretz. The Ebishter is described, Malki Tzedek describes to Avraham and Avraham himself uses the expression that the Ebishter acquired heaven and earth. The mountain that Hashem's right hand acquired. And in Pirkei Avos, it lists also Avraham Avinu, because Maharsha explains, since it says, Baruch Avraham, Lekel Elyon, Koine Shemaim Va'aretz, and we know Shemaim Va'aretz themselves were created in the schos of Avraham, Behi Baram, the pasuk says, Eila Tordos Shemaim Va'aretz, Behi Baram, and Behi Baram stands for Be'Avraham, you rearrange the letters, so it means, therefore, Avraham himself is also a Kenyan of the Eibishter. He was born much later, but the Eibishter created the whole world in the schos that one day there's going to be an Avraham. So therefore, so now with all of that, the Eibishter says to Hosea, "Va'ata amarta ha'avirim b'uma acheres." Years earlier, you said you should just swap out the Jewish people for another nation. What were you thinking? Kiven sheyoda shachata. So now Hosea realized for the first time that he had done wrong. Amad levakash rachman alatzmai. So he stands up and starts davening for himself that the Eibishter should have rachmanos on him for speaking wrongly to the Eibishter. Amar lo yakarish baruchu, but Hashem says to him, never mind davening for Rachmanos for yourself. Bakash Rachman al Yisrael, daven for Rachmanos for the Jewish people. Because of you, because of your kitrug, I made three gzeres on the Jewish people. Golus and Golus and Loy Ruchoma and Loy Ami. So daven for them. So sure enough, Hosea got up and started davening for Rachmanos for the Jewish people. Ubito gzera, and he was mevatol these gzeras. Now it doesn't mean obviously there was a golos in the end, there was a korban in the end, but it means one, first of all, much less, and second of all, it means it was postponed. When Hosea started, this whole story we're saying happened in the time of Uzziyahu, the first Beis Hamikdash. But what we're saying is, first of all, it took about 60 odd years from when Hosea started saying Nevuah before the kingdom of the Aseret HaShvatim was destroyed, and it took another 130 years after that before the kingdom of Yehuda was destroyed. So the Eibishter delayed the Gzeres and also reduced the severity of them. The Hischa Levorchan. So then, instead, Hosea started saying brachos on the Jewish people. Shenema, as the pasuk says, this is the beginning of Hosea Perek Beis. We read it as the Haftorah Parshas Bamidbar. When the number of the Jewish people will be like the sand of the sea that's uncountable. And instead of where it was being told to them, "You're not my people," as we had the third child was called Loy Ami. The Jewish people will be said on them, "You are the children of the living God." So that's the first gzera was canceled. And Bnei Yehuda and Bnei Yisrael will be gathered together. And the pasuk said the Gemara doesn't quote they'll gather together and come out of Golos. And the end of that perek says Uzratia Libaoretz. The Eibishter says, "I will plant them for me in the land." So instead of the original Yisrael that they're going to be scattered and planted among the Goyim in Golos, now that Zeta is being canceled, and there's going to be the opposite. We're going to be replanted in Eretz Yisrael where we belong. So that's the gzera of Yisrael is canceled. Verichamtias loy ruchama. I will have rachmanos on loy ruchama. So the gzera implied by loy ruchama is canceled. But amarti loy ami ami ata. I will say to the ones who were not my people, "You are my people." So therefore, the gzera of loy ami is canceled. So that's the Hosea daven that the Eibishter should do that. And sure enough, the Eibishter promised that Lasid lover he will do that. Yeah, that he did trouble. Yeah. Okay. So now the Gemara mentions, by the way, some other things that come out of this story. First of all, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Oyla l'Rabbanus Shama Kaberes Es Ba'alea. Oyvei, to leadership, it causes the people who have it to be buried to die young. And we see that she'ein lecha kol navi v'navi shalak kipach arba malachim biyamav. You can see as an example where you don't have a single navi who didn't cut off, meaning bury, four kings during his lifetime. In other words, that the Nevi'im outlived the kings by a lot. For example, by Yeshaya, it says, so on Omer Aleph, we quoted by about Hoshea, that it lists four kings in whose times he said Nevuah. And by Yeshaya, you also have, so you see that Yeshaya outlived all four of them. He started his Nevuah on the day that Uzziyahu got Saras. He continued throughout the rest of Uzziyahu's lifetime, and Yosam's, and Ochaz, and Yechizkiah's. And we know the Gemara in Yevamos tells him that he was still alive when Menasheh became king, and then Menasheh had him killed. So we see that, they have a whole story, because Menasheh was a Rosho. You have a whole story over there, but he was inside a tree, yeah. But so the point is, we see that Yeshaya outlived four kings. So you see that's, and why is it? It's not Lav Dafka that Yeshaya had a much longer lifespan than normal. What it is because these kings were leaders, they're functioning as kings, and they're ruling over the Jewish people, that tends to shorten a person's lifetime. For a number of reasons. One of them is that one of them is because it makes him less humble, because it makes him he's less likely to be able to accept Teichacha from people. Okay. Why do we find that Yeravam, the Ben Yoyash, was the king of the Aseres HaShvatim, that he's counted together with Malchus Yehuda? As the Gemara is going to quote in a second, where we have when it introduces Hosheas and also Amos's Nevuas, both of them it lists the four Malchus Yehuda in whose times they said Nevuah, and it also mentions Yeravam. Now, why does Yeravam have the source to be mentioned together with Malchus Yehuda, where Malchus Yehuda are the more important kings after all, the real king, the real legitimate kings after all? The reason is because he didn't want to listen to Lashon Hara about the Navi Amos, which we'll see in a second where we see that. So first of all, where do we see that he's listed together with them? So dichtiv dvar Hashem asher hoya l'Hashem ben be'eri v'mei Uzziah Yosam Ochaz Yechizkiah Malchus Yehuda uv'mei Yeravam and Yoyash Melech Yisrael. And also, it was in the time of Yeravam. And now the point is, first of all, why is Yeravam listed at all? And second of all, there were a number of other Malchus Yisrael during their period. After Yeravam died, his son Zechariah took over and ruled for a few months. Then he was assassinated, and then somebody else took over, etc. So why does it list only Yeravam? Actually, the Malbim actually has a very interesting explanation about it. Al Pi Pshat, he says there came a period when Yeravam and his kingdom were actually able to exercise control over the kingdom of Yehuda. There had been in a previous generation, the Yeravam's father Yoyash had defeated Malchus Yehuda in a battle, and then in fact even arrested the king for a while. So therefore, some of the Malbim learns that there was a period over there when the Malchus Yisrael were in control over Malchus Yehuda as well, and therefore it lists them. Eventually, they were able to free themselves, and therefore, but they went back to being two kingdoms. But that's on a pshat level. But the Gemara wants to know on a drasha level, why is Yeravam mentioned uniquely among all the kings? So where do we see that he didn't listen to Lashon Hara on Amos? So like this, the Pasuk mentioned, Amos says in Nevuah that he's telling about all the disasters that are going to happen if the Jewish people don't do tshuva and get rid of their Avodah Zarah and the other, and then the problems they're doing, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, etc., etc. So he says, V'kamti al beis Yeravam b'cherev. I will stand up, the Ebishta says, against the house of Yeravam with a sword. Yeravam means the second Yeravam over here, who's king of Yisrael at that time, and he's saying in Nevuah that his family is going to end up being destroyed by the sword. Now, what happened was Yeravam himself ruled for 41 years and died peacefully. His son Zechariah took over, but then Zechariah was already the fourth generation from Yehu. The promise had been that Yehu's four generations are going to sit on the throne. So after 6 months, he was assassinated by a fellow named Shalom ben Yavish, and that's how the Nevuah came true. So what happened was, the Pasuk says, Vayishlach Amatzia Koyen Beisel. Now Amatzia, who was the Koyen of the Egel Azahav in Beisel, so he was a Rosha, he sent a message, El Yeravam Melech Yisrael Leimer. He sent a message to Yeravam, the king of Israel, saying, Koshar Alach HaBagomer, Amos is plotting against you. And he continues, this is what Amos said, Yeravam is going to be killed by the sword. Now that was a lie. That was, as they call it nowadays, fake news. Because he didn't say Yeravam is going to be killed by the sword. He said the family of Yeravam is going to be killed by the sword, which came true because his son Zechariah was killed. But Amatsia twisted it to say that Omos is saying that Yerovam himself is going to be killed. So what happened? Omar, when Yerovam heard that, he said, Chas v'shalom Omar oisit tzadik kach. Chas v'shalom that tzadik could have said such a thing, because we have a promise that there were supposed to be four generations of Yehu's descendants who are kings of Israel, and I'm only the third. So he knew that already. The Im Omar, but if he said it, if he Taka said that I'm going to be killed, okay, Ma Esaloi, what can I do for him? Okay, the Ebishter can change his mind. Shechina Omraloi, the Shechina told him what to say. He's not just making up his own things. So Yeravam didn't want to accept the Lashon Hara on Omos, and therefore the schos of that was that he's counted together with the Malcha Yehuda in the Pasuk. So he didn't do anything to Omos, right? Going back to the story with Hoshea, Omer Rabbi Elazar, Afilu b'shas kaseh shalakadosh baruch hu zeichros rachmim. Even when the Eibishter is angry at the Jewish people, he still remembers rachmim. Shenemar, because the pasuk we quoted before says, Ki loy oisif oid arachem es beis Yisrael. I will no longer have rachmanos on the Jewish people. Now, it's a harsh thing that he's saying, I'm not going to have rachmanos, but he's mentioning the word rach. He could have said, I'm going to be angry at the Jewish people. He could have, whatever. The fact that he chose the expression which uses an expression of rachmim implies that the Eibishter still remembers rachmim even at a time like that. In fact, some of the Mefarshim say that what it can also mean is, ki loy oisif oid, I will no longer be angry at them. Al rachim, es beis Yisrael, I will have rachmonos on the Jewish people. In other words, that even in that itself, yeah, this is what we say in davening, beroigas rachim tizko, that even when the Eibishter is angry, he still remembers rachmonos. Rabbi Yosi Reb Chanina says you can learn this from the end of that same pasuk, because the pasuk continues ki nosoi es alahem, that I will forgive them. Now it's true in context of the pasuk is saying it as a rhetorical question: should I forgive them? Or Rashi on the pasuk explains it means I'm going to put the full measure of their punishment on them, etc. But still, the fact that he uses the lashon nosoi like noisei oven rafesha also implies that the Eibishter still remembers rachmim at a time. Okay. The Eibishter sent the Jewish people into Golos among the nations only so that Gerim should be added to them. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, one second, we'll explain that. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk that we quoted before from Hosea, Uzratia liba oretz, I will plant her for me in the land. So Klum Adam Zerea saw, Ela lahachnis kama korin. A person plants a saw of grain intending that he's going to harvest many korim. So the same way the Eibishter planted us in Golos, in order that he'll have a harvest of many kurim of gerim. Rabbi Yechanan says you can derive it from the end of that same pasuk where it says I will have mercy on the ones who I didn't have mercy on. In other words, the goyim who were the and the pasuk continues. Rashi quotes that half of the pasuk also. The ones that were previously not loy ami, that were not my people, will now become amiata. They will become part of my people because they have gerim that come and join the Jewish people throughout the ages. Now, of course, you know, and when you get down to it, there haven't been that many datum throughout the Jewish people, throughout the whole history of Golos, that we should say that it was worthwhile. So in many places in Chassidus, it explains that the deeper idea of it is that we're sent into Golos in order to gather nitzutzis, to do avodas habirurim throughout the world. In other words, the idea is, if it hadn't been, if there didn't have to be a Golos, if the Jewish people had done what they were supposed to, then the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says it would have been like a magnet that draws everything, all the Netzutzah Kedusha in the world would have been drawn to us in Eretz Yisrael, like it was in Shlomo HaMelech's times, where everybody, when Malchus Shiva and everybody is coming to visit him, hey, Yois, that didn't work out. And instead, the Eibishter sent us to all the different places in the world in order to do avodas habirurim over there. Those are the Gerim that we're talking about. So sometimes you have actual physical people who become Gerim, but sometimes it's just that you have a spark of Kedusha that was liberated. My dichtiv, what does it mean? Back to back, two psukim in Mishlei, Al Talshen Eved El Adonav, don't slander a slave to his master, Penya Kalelcha V'Ashamda, because he might curse you and then you're going to be guilty. Uchtiv, and the next passage continues, Dur Ovev Yikalel, a generation that curses his father, Ves Imei Lo Yevorech, and he doesn't bless his mother. So what does that mean? Mishum De Ovev Yikalel. So what is the second passage by itself doesn't seem to have any meaning. What does it mean? Mishum de ovev yikalel ves imei lo yivarech al talshein. So what does that mean? What is it going together? Because you have a generation that curses their father and doesn't honor their mother, therefore you shouldn't say lashon hara about them. No, what it means is Ela afilu dosh of Yukalaves Imala Yvarach, Al Talshan Evadala Donov, still don't treat them like a slave and you're gonna slander him to his master. Don't do that, Minolon Mahesheya. We see that from this whole story of Hesheya, where he said to the Abishter, it's fine, just get rid of the Jewish people and replace them with another. And we're saying no, even when they're on such a low level of Yukala, they're cursing out the Abishter and so forth. Nevertheless, Al Talshan, don't say Lashon Hara about them and say, forget it, just replace them with somebody else. What does it mean, a posik in the Shira of Devorah, the tzedakah of his pirzon in the Jewish people? Now, the simple meaning of pirzon means unwalled cities. In other words, that Devorah is saying, up until now, there was danger from the enemies, so therefore we had to live in walled cities. Now that the Eibishter has helped us defeat Sisera and that whole army, now we're able to freely live wherever we want again. But the Gemara Darshan's tzedakah, also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Yisrael, shepizron levena umas. It means the Eibishter did a tzedakah with the Jewish people, that he scattered them, pirzon, meloshen pozer. Sometimes you have Shoshim and Lashon Kodesh, where you can switch around the second and the third letters of the Shodesh. So here, Pozer becomes Poraz, which is Pirzonai. What? Prozestation of Shalim is related. Yeah, it means unwalled cities, right? But here with the Gemara's Darshan, it Meloshon Pozer, Meloshon scattered. So it means, in other words, the Eibishter did a favor to the Jewish people that he scattered them among the nations. Now, one reason is, the Gemara is going to say over here now, the Gemara is going to explain, because this way the Goyim can never wipe out all the Jewish people at once, which, by the way, goes to show the greatness of the Nes of Purim, because then all the Jewish people were under one empire. And then if Haman had his way, then Chas v'Shalom, but in other Golos and not, but also... There's a mimer of the Friedrich Rebbe on it, which he said during the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin's Sheva Brachos, where he explains an idea behind it. It was also this way: when Jews in one country are being persecuted and can't keep Torah and mitzvahs, like in Russia, then you have Jews in other countries who are able to. They were able to daven and are able to do mitzvahs and whatever on their behalf. It also, the Rebbe talked about the idea sometimes that also the idea is, in different places in the world, they speak different languages, they eat different foods or whatever. And this way, again, it goes with this avodas habirurim that we're talking about before. This way, we're able to be mevarim many different aspects of the world, more so than if all Jews lived in one country or under one empire. And by the way, yes, in a number of maimorim, it does relate it to prozis teish of Yerushalayim, that from the pizron beino umas, from this avodas habirurim, comes to the Mila of Prozis Teich of Yerushalayim, that that Yerushalayim will expand beyond all boundaries. Yeah. Anyway, so the Eibishter did its tzedakah. V'hainu d'omolei ha'hu mina l'Rav Chanina. As we find that a certain min one time said to Rav Chanina, anan ma'alin en minayich, he says, we goyim are better than you. The Pasuk tells us how Yoav was fighting against Edom, and then he stayed there for 6 months and killed all the males in Edom. So you see what an achso he was. This min is saying that he wiped out the whole nation as much as possible. In fact, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra he would have killed all of them, except that he thought it's not Timchas Zecher Amalek, but rather Zohar. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, on the other hand, continues the min, the ilu anan isinchu gabon kamashoni. On the other hand, you Jewish people are living among us goyim for so many years, v'loy kavdin l'chumidi, and we haven't done anything to you. We haven't wiped you out. Never mind, they fought against the Jewish people plenty of times and killed quite a few of them, but he's priding himself, at least we didn't wipe out all of you. Amaloi, said of Chaninat, said of Well, Min could be a Yid who's worshiping Avodah Zarah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times in these Gemaras, the censor is switched around different things. So it could have been, instead of Min, it was supposed to say Goy or Nochri or whatever. I don't know. Anyway. But I mean, it could be. I mean, Bechlal, the word min sometimes means the early Christians. So in that time, you had some of the early Christians were Jews, some of them were Goyim, and it could be even the ones who were Jews, you know, they're identifying more with the Romans than they are with the Jews anymore. Anyway, Omaloi, said Rav Chanina, says to him, if you want, one of my Talmidim will deal with you. Nitpalei Rav Oshia, said Rav Oshia, went to talk with the guy. Omalei, he says, the reason why you're not wiping out the Jewish people, it's not because you're such nice guys. Mishum deloyad itu hechi tavdu, because you yourselves have no idea what to do. Tichlinen kulu, are you going to try to wipe out the whole Jewish people? You can't lessen hu gamaychu. The whole Jewish people don't live in your territory for you to be able to do that. My de'ika gabaychu. Are you thinking you're just going to wipe out the Jews who live in the Roman Empire? People are going to call you a cut-off kingdom, like a genocidal kingdom, that you're wiping out a whole major part of your own empire. So in other words, he's saying, if at least you had them all in your empire, nobody would say that in the end. Because, okay, you know, like by Haman, then, you know, you've gotten rid of a dangerous element in your society. But you're, anyway, there's still going to be Jewish people left. So what are you gaining? People are just going to say, like they said about the Nazis at the time. And since then, you know, they're just committing genocide, you know. Amalei, so the Min says to him, Gapa dure moi, which means I swear by the Avodah Zarah of Rome. We go to bed with this thought. We get up with this thought. We're obsessed by this thought always. What should we do to the Jewish people? And we always realize that we have this dilemma that you're saying, and therefore we can't. So he admitted that, Taka, we're not harming you because we're such nice guys. It's because we don't have any ability to be able to do it in a way where it's Taka going to be effective throughout the whole world. But we see, in other words, that's what we're saying, the tzedakah that the Eved Shtetl did to the Jewish people that scattered them in different nations. And this way, the Romans or the Nazis or whoever never has the opportunity to be able to get all the Jewish people all at once. Okay, to be continued tomorrow. Bez Hashem, Muragata.